This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, NHL Midweek's final Wednesday show of the season. We're looking forward to this. It's going to be a great night tonight. NHL playoffs getting started, and that's really, you know, what we all work for. Why we do this? Because this time of the year, the playoffs is the best thing possible. I mean, the guys here, Ezzy Ginsberg joins me in the Winnipeg Free Press studio and restaurant, and Dave Manouk. I'm Richard Pollock. I'm filling in for Drew Mandel, the usual host of the show. He's actually going to be back next week, so you're stuck with me for one more show. But we have a great show for you tonight. Anthony Sanfilippo of the Philadelphia Flyers is going to join us to preview the Flyers-Rangers series, which gets underway tomorrow. Kelly Chase of the St. Louis Blues, former player for the Blues, if you remember, one of the great fighters of his era, tough guys. He's going to join us at the top of the next hour. And then Dan Rusinowski of the San Jose Sharks, a play-by-play man on their radio coverage, will join us. So we have you covered for tomorrow night's games. We're going to get into those series, the Sharks-Kings, the Blues-Hawks, and the Flyers-Rangers. You might say those are the three best series, guys, in the first round. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens there. But first, we're going to get into the Paul Maurice contract extension today, or contract. Kind of came out of the blue, you'd say. You know, we were wondering what was going to happen, but it comes down just around noon, just before noon, I think it was. Paul Maurice is re-signed with the Winnipeg Jets for a four-year term. Guys, what was your reaction to that contract when you found out this morning?
Yeah, Richie, you mentioned it. We were expecting this news to come within the next two or three weeks. The season just ended about 4 days ago with the game against the Calgary Flames last Friday. And it came a little bit out of nowhere, and I think we all expected Paul Maurice to sign for 3 or 4 years if he did choose to sign, and he did. And it was big news that Kevin Cheveldayoff mentioned in his press conference. I know that Dave had it up on LegalCurve.com, and they carried it on TSN 1290 radio. Not a surprise at all in the sense that he's coming back, because the way Paul Maurice was talking, especially after games and in the coaches' summit that H&L had a couple of weeks back during that California road trip, you could tell that Paul Maurice was building towards the future, and even in those last couple games, you could tell that he was talking like someone, Richie, who he was going to be back next year. And I think that even you can look at the record, and the record was really good after he took over, but still 18 wins out of 34 games, not spectacular considering mm-hmm. that they lost quite a few games in the last before that last little flurry of games when they won their last two games. But it's no surprise, and I think it's really nice that Paul Maurice was able to come in here, and now he has the knowledge that he's going to be under contract for 4 years, so it's nice. And now he can start building and talking with the management, the scouting staff, building up towards the draft. So it's nice that they got it out of the way right before the playoffs start.
Dave, before I want to hear your take on it too, but I want to hear Ezzy's take on this part, and then I want to get to you. Four-year term, Ezzy. Were you surprised that Paul Maurice got a four-year contract?
Well, we were talking about it on Saturday's show, and we were expecting it to be 3 or 4 years. I don't think anybody expected it to be a year with an option. I think we were all expecting that. A little bit surprised that I guess maybe he got the extra year, but not really. I think a guy like Paul Maurice, who brings years of NHL head coaching experience with Toronto and Carolina, and before that, you remember that team called the Hartford Whalers. So he brings so much coaching experience. So I'm not surprised. I think the Jets management know what they have in Paul Maurice. They like what he's done. And it is a small sample size. 34 games, that's a small sample mm-hmm. size. But I think in that short amount of time, they know what they have, they like it, and they were prepared to offer him that four-year deal.
Dave, what do you think about the hiring of Paul Maurice and the contract that he received?
You know, I was a little surprised. I wasn't terribly surprised that he got a four-year deal. I mean, it seems like 4 years was going to be a lot. But we were originally thinking maybe it would be 3 years, but he mm-hmm. obviously, you know, he had kind of created enough of a momentum to get that extra year out of the Jets. So that was good from his point of view. Now, you know, and I really saw the way he was building this team for the last couple of weeks, especially when he did that bag skate with the guys, that he was really suggesting that he was setting a tone for next year. And he said, you know, I'm doing this because even if I'm not here, I want this team to have the right foundation. But the reality is, you really saw that he was talking about this as if this was his team, and he was creating a foundation for the team moving forward for next season. So I think that, you know, especially when you heard, especially with the players and the way they spoke about wanting him back. When Andrew Ladd, the captain of the team, says, I want him back.
That was it.
That to me was that was kind of game, set, match, really. It was just like, you have the captain of the team basically saying, I want this guy back. What else is the team going to do at that point? right? They're not going to go against the captain. It was reiterated by Blake Wheeler and other players who spoke about what it was like to have Paul Maurice as the coach.
Before I get to the 4 years again with you, do you think that there's a little bit of a honeymoon phase here, not knowing, you know, if he was going to come back or not, that everybody would be on their best behavior, but now they know he's back, they're more apt to maybe take it a little bit easier?
In what respect?
In respect of if you have a coach come in for a short period of time, you don't know if he's going to be back. You give your all because you don't know what's happening. You want to impress the coach and all that. Now you know he's there for the long term for 4 years. Are you not out to prove as much as you were before?
I see you're saying from a player point of view. Yeah, potentially, but I think the players have been put on notice. And they know that he's going to have a...
Have they in terms of the general manager? He doesn't move guys, really, for the most part. He hasn't made a player-for-player NHL trade in 3 years. So do they feel like that kind of pressure is on them?
I think so, because I don't think that... I think there's... Like Gary was saying, is there anybody untouchable today, he asked, in the press conference with Kevin Cheveldayoff. And the reality is, while there's a core that you probably think aren't going to be touched, I think if this team kind of underperforms, we're going to see a change in that sort of behavior and in that mentality. So I don't think there's anybody that's untouchable. And I think that the fact of the matter is the coach is going to come in there and he's going to know, look, I'm the coach for the next 4 years. The Jets, unlike a team like the Canucks, aren't going to take a coach that they gave a 4-year contract to and let him go after 6 months because the team's underperforming. They've basically said, we now have given this coach a mandate to take this team and do it, mold it in his vision, and move it forward.
So you're okay with the 4 years?
Yep.
Okay, so Ezzie is okay with the 4 years, Dave's okay with the 4 years. Next question on that, I'll get in on that in a second, but next question on that, what do you guys make of the 4 years coinciding exactly with Kevin Cheveldayoff's term in the Jets? He has 4 years remaining on his contract as well.
Yeah, there definitely could be something to that with Chevy getting that extension above and beyond the 5-year contract that he signed when the Jets first moved over from Atlanta. And I think that when you look at where this team is going, I think those two have to be intertwined, Richie, because this team has missed the playoffs for 3 years now. We all know that. And the expectation moving forward is for this team to make the playoffs. Maybe not winning the Stanley Cup next year or within the 2 years, but this team has to make the playoffs in order for this fan base to really be satisfied. And I think for these players to be satisfied, when you look at the group that's come over from Atlanta, this is a team that's, I truly believe this. They are sick of missing the playoffs. And, you know, talk is cheap. I know Dave was there for the end of season interviews. I wasn't there. And you could tell that these guys are frustrated that they have to answer the same questions about missing the playoffs and coming up short and what went wrong and all of that. So back to the Maurice contract, though, and the fact that it's 4 years, I think for Chevy, he probably maybe would have liked to give him maybe 1 year less and maybe Maurice. We don't know that. Maybe Maurice asked for the extra year, and that was one of the conditions on him deciding to sign a long-term contract with the Jets. But I think that when you know that the coach has knowing that his contract is guaranteed for that long, the security was the word I was looking for, I think that is a benefit to the entire organization, knowing that for the next 4 years, and again, stuff happens. We know.
Well, Port's, I mean, it just Port's means he's going to get paid for 4 years. Doesn't mean he's going to be here for four
right,
years.
Right, but the intention is for him to be here for 4 years, right? So we know that with John Tortorella and Mike Gillis, they signed 5-year contracts, and it's possible, we already know Gillis is gone, there's the possibility that Torts isn't going to be there. So you're right, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be there, but they like what they've seen, and they'd like him, and they want to give him the team for the next 4 years, which is a nice amount of years. It's not a couple years. They know that they like what they've seen in Paul Maurice, and as far as Chevy goes, the next 4 years are important too.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, joined to the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe by Ezra Ginsberg and David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com. Dave, what do you think about the fact that the contract given to Paul Maurice, 4 years, which is probably a little bit out of the ordinary for a coach, I'd say. What do you think about the fact that it coincides exactly with the remaining term on Kevin Cheveldayoff's deal?
That was the end question today's presser with Kevin Cheveldayoff, and I think it was Joe Piscucci who asked him, is it happenstance or was it by design? And he essentially said it was coincidental, and that he didn't intend on structuring it so that his deal and Paul Maurice's deal and actually a number of the core players' deals would be kind of up at that point. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's interesting to see how that kind of all happened. It'll be, to me, it's kind of it's for Cheveldayoff, it'll be a testament to what he's been able to do with his team over 7 years. So we'll have had 7 years.
It's a long time.
Presumably. presumably of Kevin Cheveldayoff's reign for this team at the end of that term. And so the question is, what will the team look like, you know, in three more years or four more years? And really, that's kind of what how he's going to be able to renew his contract based on that, if they're going to. Because I think, you know, someone, I don't remember who asked him today, how would you evaluate your position with the team? How have you done well? Have you not done well? Where have you struggled? Where have you succeeded? And the fact of the matter is, he said, like, you know, there's areas that I haven't done what I needed to get done, but I've other areas where I have. And so the question for him, I guess, will be, it won't be so much talk at that point. It'll really be, what was the end result? Because people are going to be able to say, was this team able to, because the whole purpose of the press conference that I took from it was, this team doesn't want to just get to the playoffs. They want to be able to win a round. No, just
that's weird, because again, I don't know any other team in the league who doesn't want to win the playoffs.
I agree with you, but what I'm getting at is,
all that stuff to me, I'm going to get in here for a second, all that stuff to me doesn't mean anything. Everybody wants to draft and everybody wants to win. So saying that stuff to me is, talk is cheap.
I agree, but what I'm getting, my point I'm making is that you can judge him based on whether he's able to achieve that goal. So yeah, right now it's very cheap to say, I want to get into the playoffs, because like you said, everybody wants to get into the playoffs and everybody wants to go deep into the playoffs. No team says, I'm happy just to make it, or I don't want to make it. Of course, that's the whole intent. The reality, though, is that when he goes to have his contract negotiations with the ownership of this team, they're going to be able to say to him, in 7 years, this is exactly what you've done. And if at the end of 7 years, he's got no playoff, entry or what, it's going to reflect poorly on him.
I'll say this before we go to break. We're going to talk more about Maurice after the break. We're going to hear from Paul Maurice talking about his contract. He held the teleconference conference call today. Dave, you were part of that. My take is this. Paul Maurice, for all intents and purposes, we're aware that he wanted to come back. I think the Jets wanted him back. I don't know why you give him a four-year deal. I just don't know why. I mean, coaches in this day and age, think about it this way. We're going to talk about this later in the show. Paul McClain, two great seasons in Ottawa, a coach and ownership and GM need to come out and say that he's coming back.
Right.
Right? Look at Dallas Eakins, who's been Edmonton for a year, and he has to be given a vote of confidence, and they're handing out a four-year deal here. Now, I'm not shocked, because they gave Cheveldayoff essentially a seven-year deal, and they're giving Paul Maurice a four-year deal. If Paul Maurice succeeds so well, so much in the first 3 years, he will re-sign here for a little bit more money. I just don't necessarily see the reason for it. In terms of Cheveldayoff, I mean, again, you said, Dave, 7 years. He has a long time to be able to prove himself. A lot of GMs don't get at least that security in terms of knowing they'll be there for 7 years or getting paid for 7 years. So certainly there's a comfort level here about the contracts people sign. You know, like Tangrady gets a two-year deal. Stewart gets a four-year deal. Caluso gets a two-year deal. These contracts aren't that common in other places, so there's certainly a security element that comes with playing here. And maybe people will say it's a Winnipeg tax. I don't agree with that. But, I mean, people are certainly entitled to their opinion. When we come back, we're going to hear from Coach Paul Maurice on his contract extension that he signed with the Jets today for four more years. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live from the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. This is the final NHL Midweek of the season. We'll be back in the beginning of the 2014-2015 season, but you can still find us on Saturdays with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This Saturday we're on at 9 a.m. and we're on at 9 a.m. throughout the remainder of the spring. So you can find us there. We're not going to have time today to talk about Kevin Cheveldayoff's presser, really. We want to talk about Olli Jokinen's contract situation. We want to talk about the NHL lottery. So that'll be all discussed on Saturday. Right now we're talking about Paul Maurice and the four-year contract extension he signed this week, and I'm joined at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe by David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com and Ezra Ginsberg. Guys, before we get to that, I want to say one thing. The Jets' misdirections that they seem to be doing before major press conferences is pretty transparent as far as I'm concerned. You know, on trade deadline day, they don't make any trades. That's fine. You know, we're not expecting them to make a blockbuster trade. But Kevin Cheveldayoff comes out to address the media. First thing he says, you know, Mark Stewart has signed a four-year contract extension. Coincidental, I personally think not. Mm-hmm. Then you get today, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff's end of season press conference. Coincidentally, they released that Paul Maurice has been assigned to a four-year term at the exact same time. So again, I mean, if they think that it's going to take the pressure or the attention, which it probably will, for some people, off. Just people should see through that. As far as I'm concerned, it's very transparent that the point they're trying to make is to move the conversation to these topics. And I still think we should be holding the guys accountable to the season that they had and analyze it for what it is.
Didn't they announce the signing of one of their junior players when they got knocked out of the playoffs?
Yeah, it was that too. And then, I mean, you have the Friday afternoon releases of ticket hikes and all that stuff. I'm not.
You know, they're good. They know how they want to deliver their message.
That's fine. I just want to note that I'm not exactly buying the way it's being thrown out there. That's all. I think some of these issues should be separated. Meaning, you know, that the steward contract's one issue as opposed to the no trades on deadline day is another issue. Again, it's not saying passing judgment in terms of the trades, but it's the moving the ball. Mm-hmm. I think people have to not always follow it. Anyhow, we heard from Paul Maurice today, and I want to, you know, hear a little bit of this audio talking about his tenure, well, what the tenure will be in Winnipeg. And the first thing, you know, he talks about is the end goal for the team, that being the Jets.
We're trying to move to the middle of the pack. I mean, the end goal here is to be a contending team, and I think there's six of those teams right now in the Western Conference. I think there's two in the Eastern Conference.
You know, you hear him there, guys, would talk about his end goal, and I think now he can talk about it a little bit more openly than before, right? Because everything was before as well, if I'm here, maybe. So what did you make of that? Is there anything that you make of comments like that, or is that, you know, the regular comments you'll hear from a coach after he takes a job?
I think they're regular comments, not only from a coach that has just signed a four-year contract extension, but a coach whose team just missed the playoffs. And it is disappointing, and we've heard the players say this, and again, it goes back to the last 3 years and the exit interviews that we've heard. And we've heard a lot of disappointment. And you're not going to ever hear a player say that they're excited that they didn't make the playoffs. And so for Paul Maurice, he knows that he has a lot of work to do. And he knows that even though he took a team that was 10 points out of a playoff spot and he got them into a position where they were competing for a playoff spot, he knows at the end of the day it doesn't matter because this team missed the playoffs. And the fan base, the management, the players, nobody's happy with finishing second. And second meaning out of the playoffs. I don't mean second in the conference. Mm-hmm. So I don't take that much into it because he's never, if he would have come in here and they would have made the playoffs, then got the contract extension, he'd be a little bit more optimistic about the team's fortunes this season. But they missed the playoffs, and at the end of the day, that's all that it matters.
Here's Paul Maurice on how and when he decided to sign with the Jets.
When I made that decision that I wanted to do the job, it was somewhere between day one and the last day, and you know, things had gone out of the gate pretty strong, but when things started to wobble a little bit, that was almost when more that the way players responded to being pushed a little bit, and that I was sure that this was the place for me, that I was comfortable here, that I thought I could be part of the solution and work with the players and the staff. And so it was fairly early on for me. I was honest when I said early, I enjoyed every minute of it. And then there's the family considerations. So I had originally planned kind of hanging around Winnipeg for the week and then going back next week usually. And, you know, you'd start to talk about contracts and the things if that issue was, and that would usually take some time. This one really didn't. I actually flew home yesterday because I had made the promise to the family that we were doing this at the kitchen table, and I'd said that enough times in the media that, well, I can't now do this by phone. So got on a plane yesterday. Kevin and I kind of quickly agreed to what was fair for both sides, and that took no time at all, but got home and then that took about 3 minutes, too. I said I wanted to go to Winnipeg and I wanted the family to be part of it, and I thought it would be great for the family. They all smiled and said, let's go. So it didn't take much time, and called Kevin and said, we're in, and put a sign on the front steps today. So
That's Paul Maurice, and you're hearing him talk about, you know, how he came to the contract, agreed to the contract with the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, and David Minuk. You're listening to the audio of Maurice there, which I thought was interesting, and certain quote that, you know, piqued my interest specifically. And that was, I spoke to Kevin, and we hashed out what was fair pretty quickly. To me, if a coach asks for a four-year deal, it takes a little bit longer of a discussion than usual, because that I think a three-year deal is what you usually see with these coaches, especially how often you see the turnover in the National Hockey League. Are you surprised that the negotiation, now we're not privy to it, it could have taken longer than that, it doesn't really appear that it did. Are you surprised that it happened so quickly?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit, because when he said early, at the end of the season interviews, he said he was going to have something decided by midweek. So I wasn't shocked that they made the announcement today, because I expected something to happen either today or tomorrow. So that wasn't that surprising. What surprised me was that they hashed it out in so quick a time frame. I mean, I thought he made it sound very casual, that it was like, you know, they literally had a cup of coffee and, you know, signed on a napkin and that was it.
Which was weird just based on the narrative all year, right?
Yeah, yeah. The more interesting thing I took from that part of the quote, or one of the quotes, was that he said he had his eye on this team for a while, which led you to believe that he was not like a vulture circling, but that he kind of had an idea that Noel was in trouble and that he would be, you know, whether the Jets would be a good fit for him down the line.
That was interesting, and he said that before. Mm-hmm. And you know the coaches do that. I mean, they know that coaches do that to them. When Maurice came in right after, what, there was a Tampa or Columbus, I forget which game it was.
After the Columbus game.
But the point was, they said that he had reached out to Maurice. Chevalier had reached out to Maurice on the Tuesday, I believe.
After the Tampa, yeah.
Right, so before the Thursday debacle. Mm-hmm. So these guys, you know, I mean, I don't know what the code is for coaches, really, because it gets done to them and they can do it to somebody else, and that's just the way it is. I think they all respect each other. Maurice is well-respected in coaching circles. Guys, the comment that made fans react the most, I think we know where we're going here. The comment that made fans react the most was Kevin Cheveldayoff's comment today about Andrei Pavlik being the number one netminder next season. And the GM at the end of the day is going to decide who the players are on the roster. And the coach then decides who to play from that. There aren't six goalies like there are defensemen or 12 forwards. He has two guys. And we know right now one is going to be Andrei Pavlik. As far as we can tell, things change. So this business is fluid for sure. Montoya, Cheveldayoff was a little more iffy on in terms of committing. Fair enough. He's more than entitled to say that. And we'll break down Cheveldayoff's presser on Saturday. But here's what Paul Maurice had to say about Andrei Pavlik.
In my mind, with Andrei Pavlik, we have to do everything we can as a team to give our goaltending the best chance to win us games, and that hasn't happened yet. And I'm talking about the time that I was there, too. We've got a lot of room to improve in our defensive game. That being said, he's got to do the things that every other player is being asked to do. Get himself in shape, get himself routine, get focused, to give himself the chance to be as good as he can be. And then we'll make an assessment. He'll make an assessment. We'll make an assessment of what we've got, not just in our goaltending, but in all these players. But for us to take the next step, we can't walk into that room and take a look at four very, five very talented guys and say, well, maybe they're not playing their best here. We got to get rid of them. We've got to get those guys to play their best and to be as good as they can be.
David, that was Paul Maurice talking about Andrei Pavlik, who is the lightning rod for criticism in Winnipeg. It really is amazing how much he's talked about on the streets and such. David, what did you make of the comments of new Jets, or now fully the coach, secured to a four-year deal, Paul Maurice's comments about apparently the starting netminder for next year, Andrei Pavlik?
You know what? Here's what it comes down to. I mean, does he feel that Andrei Pavlik is the guy and is going to be the guy who can get this team to the next level? To be honest with you, I have no idea. But what I do know is that an NHL coach is not going to throw his goaltender, you know, conceivably the only goaltender he has right now, under the bus because fans want him to. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen.
Nope.
So you're not going to get a coach to say, you know, oh, he's got to do this, 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 and this. You know what? It's right now, all the coach is going to do is pump his tires because he has to have him in the right mind frame through the summer.
I wonder what coach is going to do, Ezzy, about this, because Maurice, it appears to me, has been basically pumping tires for the past 3 months. I mean, Laughlin is great. Everybody's great.
Yeah.
I've never seen so many guys who are great. But I'm wondering, is that a product of being an interim head coach, or will that always be the way he is?
It's a valid question. It really is. And I think the answer is subjective, right, Richie? And I think that's why you're asking it. And I think that is part of it. I think that when you're a coach who doesn't know that they're here long term, of course you're going to say all these positive things. And with the exception of maybe Evander Kane and Devin Setoguchi, he had positive things to say about everybody. But back to what Dave said, Dave is 100% right. With all due respect to the presser, the comments by Cheveldayoff, in my opinion, mean absolutely nothing.
Yeah, no.
So when you have a goalie who is under contract for several more years, and with the exception of him being bought out, we know he's back, and we don't know that the other goalie's been back, and all indications point to they are going to make a change in goal, bringing someone else in or someone within the system. My money would be in bringing someone else in to push Andrei Pavlik.
I agree with that.
Because I think this is the last year that Andrei Pavlik just is given the number one, given the throne. I think even though contract aside, I don't think he's had the throne here for 3 years. Mm-hmm. They've dubbed him the number one goaltender. There is no 1A, it's number one. And they can't afford to have a goaltender who's below mediocre. He's not a mediocre goaltender at this point. He's below mediocre. And Andrei Pavlik,
the organization traded Kari Lehtinen, remember.
Right, and he's nowhere, at this stage in his career, he's nowhere near where Kari Lehtinen was at that age or now. So I think that even though, it's nice to see Chevy and Maurice say that all these things about how Andrei Pavlik is the number one goaltender, and he's still our guy. Well, next year, if he starts out of the gate like he did this year, I think they're going to have to make a change. And whether that's moving him or just giving someone else more starts in net, I think that's going to be the true test. But right now, at the end of the season, just like Dave said, what are you going to say? Oh, we're not that confident in him. I think we're going to have to go get someone else. We're going to have to let time really tell what's going to happen with Pavlik, because I think he gets one more year, and then they're going to have to make that switch.
I have a feeling this isn't the last we're talking about Andrei Pavlik. So that's it for this segment. We're going to talk about Pavlik throughout the summer, guys. I don't know how much it'll depend on what they do in goal. It probably won't even depend on what they do in goal. We'll break it down more than we just did right now. This segment was brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat it in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. After this, we're going to break down the Philadelphia Flyers against the New York Rangers, first time since 97, with Anthony Sanfilippo of the philadelphiaflyers.com, and we're going to give you a score update on the playoff games thus far. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hartnell's backhand across ice, miss Couturier. Couturier able to jam it in deep. Washington has to hustle back for that. And a turnover out in front. Giroux scores! Claude Giroux, after Hartnell with a great forecheck, creates the turnover. Giroux's got his second goal of the game. Four goals the last two games against the Caps, and it's 3-0.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, NHL Midweek, the last NHL Midweek of the season. Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday show will continue throughout the entire year as we usually do, but we're taking the summer off of our Wednesday show, the final show today from the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. I'm Richard Pollock, joined at the Free Press Cafe by Ezra Ginsberg and David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, and now we have Anthony Sanfilippo of the Philadelphia Flyers.
What's up, boys?
I love it. Well, Anthony, first off, all right, we have to clarify something. How excited are you that you're not talking to Drew?
Oh, come on now. It's a treat every time I get Ezra on the phone. That's all I look forward to every time. Doesn't matter who else is there. As long as Ezra's there, I feel warm.
I appreciate that, Anthony. And the thing is, not only do you not get Drew, you get Dave Manuk as a bonus.
No, that's always a bonus. Now, wait a second. Did you guys just say this is your final show this year?
Final Wednesday show of the year. Saturday show goes on throughout the off season.
Oh, okay. All right. Good. Okay. I was getting a little nervous because I know the next thing you guys are looking forward to after the playoffs is the draft.
Yeah, you don't want us anywhere near you that early. You know, we need to prep. We need to make sure we're ready to go. We need to know all the top prospects.
We just have to hope Anthony has the barbecue ready.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? The funny thing is, it's funny you say that. I'm actually sitting in the car with my son Anthony Jr., who I've told he needs to get the barbecue cleaned and ready to go for when you guys get here. And he doesn't believe me when I say that. But now that I'm on the phone with you, he can hear it and be like, oh, yeah, geez, I do have to get that barbecue ready.
Anthony Jr. has some responsibilities. Yeah, there's no question.
That's right.
Anthony, let's let's talk hockey. And let's start with, I mean, this is a huge rivalry. People in Winnipeg appreciate how big the rivalry is between the Philadelphia Flyers and the New York Rangers going back a long ways. What do you think, you know, from your perspective as a journalist, what do you think is the storyline of this series?
That's a great question, because there's no real recent history between these two teams. I mean, they haven't played in the playoffs since 1997, which is crazy to think, you know, with these two teams being such storied rivals in the same division for so long, to be able to go 17 years between playoff matchups is kind of crazy. But, you know, the Rangers were really bad there for a long period of time and didn't make the playoffs, so it kind of went a little bit dormant rivalry-wise for a little while. And, you know, the whole thing with Pittsburgh resurfaced and Sidney Crosby and everything else, and that kind of became the number one rival for the Flyers, and the New York thing came second. But I think it's about to renew, and it's going to be really interesting. There's a lot of interesting storylines. You know, the fact that the Flyers can't win in New York. They haven't won there in 3 years. You got some former Stanley Cup champion teammates playing against each other with Vinny LeCavalier and Brad Richards and Marty St. Louis. It's really, if you really want to look real close at it, it's the Flyers' offense, which is really good and deep. Guys, at least one 20 goal scorer on four different lines, going up against a Rangers team that doesn't really score that much, but plays great defense and has great goaltending. So it's a little bit of there's some good things there. Nothing that's based off of recent animosity, but I still think there's going to be a lot of fun stuff to talk about in this series.
Anthony, Steve Mason suffered an injury towards the end of the season, and Ray Emery's now tasked as the guy to lead the Flyers in the series. Do you think that the team feels confident behind him?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting. Ray Emery was given a number of starts after the Olympic break, and every one of them was against a top-caliber opponent. It was a little bit different of philosophy by Craig Berube, and he wasn't doing it in anticipation of Steve Mason getting injured, but he was doing it to say, you know what, if I need to go to my backup goalie at any time in the playoffs, I want him to be sharp. And I want him to be sharp against the best teams, not playing against Buffalo or Florida. He played instead against San Jose and Pittsburgh and St. Louis and Chicago. I mean, he played against some really good teams this season. And I think a little bit that's why his numbers are a little bit higher than maybe you would expect. But if you actually watched Ray Emery play this year, with the exception of a couple of starts where he might have been a little rusty or a little shaky, I think that he played really well. And a lot of times, you know, if he gave up three goals or four goals in a game, I would pin it more on bad defense in front of him more so than the goalie not looking good. And he did it against good teams. So I think that the team's confident in having him there. That said, I'm not convinced Steve Mason is out long-term here. I think this might be a game-to-game kind of thing. If he's going to miss game one, we know that. But I really wouldn't be surprised if he's ready to go by Sunday.
Anthony, as you know, playoffs always come down to matchups. Playoff series always come down to matchups. For you, when you look at the series between the Flyers and the Rangers, is it a matchup with the Flyers' defense, or is it the Rangers' defense trying to shut down one of the lines? To you, what's the key matchup in the series?
You know, I think I have a different take than most people. I think that the series is going to be determined by the Flyers' depth line. And I say that because I think the Rangers are going to have their top D pairing of Ryan McDonagh and Dan Girardi out on the ice almost 30 minutes a game. I mean, they average 25 regular season. They're probably going to play close to 30. So they're going to be out there half the game almost every time the Giroux line is out on the ice. They're going to be out there on the power when the Flyers are on the power play. So if the Flyers are going to win this series, I think it's going to come down to secondary scoring. And I think that that's where guys like Sean Couturier and Matt Reed, that line needs to get – put some pucks in the net. And I think Vinny LeCavalier on the fourth line needs to create a little bit of offense as well. I think if those three players can maybe give the Flyers, you know, a handful of goals in this series, I think that you'll see that would be a positive for them, and they could probably come out on top. If the Flyers can't get scoring from down their lineup and have to rely solely on Giroux, Hartnell, Voracek, and then maybe, you know, Simmons on the power play, and that's it, I think it could be a detriment for the Flyers in this series.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live from the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe in downtown Winnipeg. We're joined by Anthony Sanfilippo of the Philadelphia Flyers, previewing the Flyers-Rangers series, which starts tomorrow night. Quick score update. Habs and Lightning are tied 1-1 in the first period. Nikita Kucherov scored in a quick goal right after by Thomas Plekanec. Anthony, you mentioned Vinny LeCavalier, and I want to talk about him. He's moved from the second line to the fourth line, from center to wing. It's been a kind of a tumultuous year for Vinny LeCavalier. There's obviously the storyline of LeCavalier, St. Louis, and Richards in the same series, you know, against each other, of course. Is he going to be able to keep up speed-wise with the Rangers based on the fact he just doesn't skate as well as he used to?
Yeah, and Vinny LeCavalier's story this season has been a crazy one. You know, at the beginning of the season, he was the only guy scoring at the very beginning. When the team was struggling mightily, he was their leading goal scorer through, like, the first 15 to 20 games. Then he got hurt. He had that back injury, and that really kind of threw off a good portion of his season. I'd say for about 45 games, he was really not himself. He wasn't scoring, didn't fit in as a winger. They tried him as a winger on the second line with Braden Chen and Wayne Simmonds. That didn't quite work out too well. And he wasn't, you know, just really didn't seem like there was a place for him. And then finally, in the last 15 games of the season, Craig Berube said, I'm going to put him back in the middle, but I'm going to put him down on the fourth line. And by doing that, he got Vinny LeCavalier into matchups against probably the weakest lines of the opposition. Now, Vinny gets some extra time. He's still getting about 16, 17 minutes a game because he plays on the second power play unit. He jumps up onto that second line when the Flyers need a little bit of offense late in the game. So he's still getting his minutes. But most of his shifts are coming on that fourth unit. And by playing down there against weaker opposition, he's really thrived. And that fourth line has scored a lot of goals. If you go back and look at the Flyers' last 15 games, they're getting production from the fourth line, which most teams don't get. And I think that's why I mentioned it as a key. Because if they can do that, if they can punch in a couple goals in this series, I think that could swing the series in favor of the Flyers in what is really an even series, I think, between these two teams.
Anthony, when you look at the coaches, you obviously have a neophyte head coach in Craig Berube, and then you have a coach in Alain Vigneault who has had success with the Vancouver Canucks. And I know when you look at the coaches, and I know Richie always likes to raise this question around this time of year about the coaches, who has the advantage. When you look at Craig Berube, I guess a two-part question, who do you think has the advantage, and what would Craig Berube's advantage maybe be over Alain Vigneault? And as a second part to that question, this is a little bit off topic, but when you look at how he came in after a 1-7 start, and then he took the Flyers, and the record was 41-23-10, and he basically got them to a third-place finish in the Metropolitan Division, do you think more people should be talking about Craig Berube as a great coach and a possible Coach of the Year candidate?
Yeah, first thing I want to say is that I've just learned that the Winnipeg audience is much smarter than the Philadelphia audience because we can't use words like neophyte on the air in Philadelphia.
I looked that one up on urbandictionary.com.
So that's good. But to answer your
question, he's a neophyte using the word neophyte, Anthony.
Yeah, no, I know what it means. I mean, geez, I mean, I don't want to insult my own intelligence, but. No, you guys, I think that it's a good point that you make about Berube. I'm going to take the second part first. Going 41-23-10, I think that he should be in the conversation. I'm not even convinced he should win. I think it's kind of hard to knock what Patrick Waugh did as a rookie coach with the Colorado Avalanche, completely unexpected, and they go out and win that division. Granted, St. Louis kind of handed it to them there at the end by coughing up the last six games of the season, but nevertheless, I think that's the most impressive coaching job. But Craig Berube has had a great season for a first-year coach, taking a team. I mean, if you go back and look at it, since they expanded the playoffs to the current format, well, to the 8-team conference format, only three times has a team started with 2 points or less in their first eight games and made the playoffs, and the Flyers just did that in maybe the most impressive way. If you look at the other ones, they were all losing records. So I think that Berube deserves some credit. As far as the matchup with Alain Vigneault, you know, Vigneault is a really smart coach. Here's a guy that took a Rangers team that had to start the season entirely on the road because Madison Square Garden wasn't ready to go, and there was a real belief that they could get behind the eight ball early. He kept the team in it all through the season, and they don't have a ton of great scoring. I mean, they just don't. And they find ways to win. So his system really works as a defensive system, grinded out system. And I think that they're very similar. And I think they both like matching up. They both like to make sure they get the right D pairs on against the right line or the right line combinations on. I think it's going to be a real chess match. That's going to be fun to watch, you know, as the game switch venues too, to see who gets the upper hand. I think it's a real good coaching matchup actually between these two guys.
Anthony, the Flyers were making news in more than just the playoffs. They signed Andrew McDonald to a 6-year deal. What's the buzz in Philly about the deal?
Just how much it cost. I think that's a little bit of a surprise. Although I guess the rationale behind giving Andrew McDonald a $30 million contract for 6 years is that if you let him go to free agency, while he may not get that in free agency, you may lose out in a bidding war against another team. So you might as well give him a few extra million to guarantee that he'll stay here and sign the deal. I think Andrew McDonald is a solid defenseman. I don't think he's a number one, number two. I think he's a second pair guy. But if you look moving forward, where he probably fits best, he plays some now with Mark Streit. He usually plays with Luke Shen as his primary partner, but a lot of times Berube likes to get him out there with Streit as well. I think that down the road, that's probably going to be the pairing that you're going to see, and you have two guys who can really move the puck playing together. So I think it's a decent signing. I'm just a little bit wary of the price tag, because now it puts the Flyers at $59 million in guaranteed money for next year. I know the cap's going up to 70, but they got to carry Pronger's $5 million until the first day of the season. So really they're at 64, and Braden Shen's still a restricted free agent right now. So it's really going to be interesting to see how that plays out for the rest of the roster, because I think it's going to affect a few other guys in the summer.
Anthony Sanfilippo, Philadelphia Flyers, thanks so much for joining us. And I can tell you one thing, by the way you ended the interview there with all that talk about the roster, it should be an interesting draft in Philadelphia this summer.
It's going to be a great draft in Philadelphia this summer. We're going to roll out the red carpet for you guys, and I can't wait to have you all down here. And I got the dog crate ready for Ezra. No worries.
We're looking forward to it, Anthony. Have a great night and enjoy the series.
Yep.
All right, guys. See you later.
When we come back, we're going to talk about Barry Trotz being fired from Nashville. Yeah, you never thought you'd hear that, did you? But we're going to talk about it next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe in downtown Winnipeg. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, joined in studio, at Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. We've created a little studio here by Ezra Ginsberg and David Manuk of illegalcurve.com. Great job so far by Chris Curry and Michael Remus helping us out as we're on location, so it's a little bit more difficult sometime than usual. Guys, difficult times for Barry Trotz this season, really, and maybe I think kind of recently he's had some trouble, and I got to be honest, I don't fault Barry Trotz. If I had a roster that Barry Trotz had, I wouldn't be very good at it either, managing that roster either. He was let go by the Nashville Predators after being the only coach in the organization's tenure so far in the National Hockey League. What do you guys make of this? People are saying it's not a firing. They mutually decided to go their separate ways. And you know, you hear that all the time about breakups and things like that, and people say, oh, those don't exist. It sounds like in this case, it actually may have existed. Ezzy, what do you make of this parting of ways between Barry Trotz, David Poile, and the Nashville Predators?
Well, how can you not use the term changing of the guard when you've only had one head coach in Nashville Predators history? And I think you make a good point, Richie. When you talk about Barry Trotz, the only head coach they've ever had, as you mentioned, and the only head coach that really David Poile has ever known with the Nashville Predators, not with the Washington Capitals, but with the Nashville Predators. So when you look at what they did, and they went out in the offseason and they got guys like Matt Cullen, and they went out and they got a guy like Eric Nystrom and Victor Stahlberg, and they went out and they got these guys thinking that they were going to play the Nashville Predators type of hockey, mm-hmm. and they were going to be able to win a lot of low-scoring games. And then what happened? Pekka Rinne got injured, and it completely screwed up the season, really, for them. And they had to rely on a guy like Carter Hutton and then later Devan Dubnyk. And really, this is a team that cannot afford... If there's any team in the NHL that can't afford to lose their goalie, with the exception of maybe the Phoenix Coyotes, it's the Nashville Predators. So Pekka Rinne, his injury was a huge disappointment for them. But when you look at his tenure, it's an absolute success. And he had the Predators in the playoffs year after year with never having a bona fide superstar. This team... And sure, Shea Weber...
Yeah, their one year with Forsberg and those guys,
right, but
Korea,
yeah,
made their run, and they lost to San Jose.
He was there for 4 weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
But without ever having a superstar year after year, right? And Shea Weber, of course, he's a superstar in the sense that he's one of the best defensemen in the NHL. But really, I think this was time. And you never heard after the season ended, would Barry Trotz be back? And you started to hear that
you did
when it got towards March, and would this be Barry Trotz's last year? And I think the reason for that is you have Shea Weber under contract for so many years, and you have a young Seth Jones coming in, and you have all of these young players, and it's a team that really, unfortunately, isn't going anywhere right now. And if you look at the Predators next year, even though they're going to get a high draft pick, I don't think, at least in my opinion, I don't think this is a team that's one or two free agents away from being a good team. I think this is a team that has an excellent defense. They brought in Michael Delzato, I think, you know, and he's had varying degrees of success in a short sample size there. But if you look at the defense, Ryan Ellis and Weber and Roman Josi, as I mentioned, Seth Jones, the defense is good. Goaltending, if Pecorine's healthy, I'm not as worried about it. But you look at the forwards. Who's scoring goals for this team?
That's been the question,
when David
right?
Legwon left, to me, that was a sign that maybe Barry Trotz was next.
And that is a good point. And Barry Trotz actually interviewed him when I was filling in for Gary on H&L earlier this year with Huss. And Barry Trotz said in that interview, you know, we have our defense for the next 10 years set. You mentioned Roman Josi. These guys are signed to long-term deals. Shea Weber. You got youngsters like Ryan Ellis. They acquired Michael Delzato, who has issues, I think, attitude issues and I think work ethic issues. And we'll have to work through those because he's so talented. But it seems like Barry Trotz's message, I look at the Nashville Predators and I don't see a team going down like Buffalo did, but very similar, Dave, to the Regier relationship with Lindy Ruff. They're always going to be close. It's just at some point you had to make a move to see if you could change the message. Let's just hope. I mean, Poile hopes that the message is being changed in Nashville differently than it was in Buffalo.
You know, it's interesting because they offered him a position within the hockey operations mm-hmm. department. So clearly it wasn't a function of saying Barry Trotz is no longer, you know, someone that they wanted within their organization. They just wanted to change the message, as said. And it's interesting because immediately speculation starts kicking up. Where is Barry Trotz going to end up? And there's three Canadian cities already, you know, one of which was Winnipeg. You got Vancouver and you got Toronto.
Well, on that point, I want to get to that. Bob McKenzie talked about Barry Trotz and the possibility that he's going to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Barry Trotz is a good coach, and I think he'll get a job somewhere else in the not-too-distant future. Is he the right guy to coach the Toronto Maple Leafs? Hard to say. The Carlisle thing obviously needs to be addressed. I think in fairness to him, as much as you need an evaluation process and everything else, this thing shouldn't be dragging out for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. Like, he's either your guy or he's not your guy. And I would think in the space of a week or two, in fairness to him, if you're going to make a move, or in fairness to him, period. Either tell him, yeah, you're back or you're gone. And if he's gone, then start your search and be aware of who's out there. And it's a competitive business and figure out what style it is that you want to play and which coach best represents that.
Boy, I mean, we're going to talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs later, but I've already had enough of them for the whole offseason. Dave, but back to your point about where he could go.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, you've already got guys like Eric Tkachuk writing articles today in the Globe and Mail about, you know, the cities that he could end up. And ironically enough, it's cities that both have head coaches right now. So, you know, it'll be a little bit of time before Barry Trotz finds his spot. But the reality is there's not going to be a lack of teams that are looking for him. Even today in the press conference, I think Mitch Peacock from CBC asked Kevin Cheveldayoff if the availability of Barry Trotz, someone who's from Dauphin, has a connection to Manitoba, would have impacted his decision in the Paul Maurice hiring. Now, he said it wouldn't, which of course is, you know, what you expect him to say. But,
right.
But it was just interesting how even here in Winnipeg, the Barry Trotz kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Persona.
The aura.
Kind of, yeah, the aura. Really kind of carried over into here. So,
Ezzy, before we go to break?
Well, he has a great track record. And, you know, he is only 51 years old. So, Dave, you mentioned earlier that they were offering him a position in management. And when you look at Barry Trotz, you might think that he's a little bit older than that. But to me, he had this team going in the right direction. And then it really kind of changed a couple of years ago. They haven't made the playoffs the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But 7 out of 8 years making the playoffs with teams, as we mentioned, Richie mentioned, you know, they did go out and get Peter Forsberg several years back. And they did try to be buyers and take the team to the next level. But it was always a team that never had the depth, like a Philadelphia Flyers, like a Detroit Red Wings, to take the next step. They only got to the second round, no further. So when you look at he deserves all of the praise that he gets because he had this team consistently as a playoff team. So I think that, as you mentioned, Dave, there is going to be no shortage of suitors and teams that are going to be calling him to see if he wants to be their head coach.
Before we go to break, this segment's brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper-fitting, custom-made mouthguard. Give yourself peace-of-mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. When we come back, we're trying to hook up with Kelly Chase of the St. Louis Blues. We don't want to get popped in the face here. You know, he's a tough guy. But we're hoping for Kelly Chase to preview the Blues and Blackhawks series. If Kelly's not able to join us, we have more than enough to talk about. Toronto Maple Leafs, who we kind of touched on there, made a few changes this week, and there might be some more changes in their MLSC structure. So we're going to discuss that if Kelly Chase can't join us. But if he can, we're previewing the Blues and Blackhawks next on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Cleared by Petrangelo to Backes. He's got an empty net. He's tripped up. Shot went wide. Touched up by Trouba. And a tripping penalty. They're going to call it a goal. David Backes is going to get the goal. It's 3-1 with a minute 11 to go in the third period.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. We're on location downtown Winnipeg at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. Richard Pollock joined at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe by Ezra Ginsberg and David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com. And we're joined on the line by Kelly Chase of the St. Louis Blues. Kelly, thanks for joining us tonight. Kelly there? Is not there? Okay. We'll wait. We had Kelly on the line, but now we're having a couple, we have a little bit of issue connection-wise. Guys, we're going to probably get Kelly back here. So I want to talk about the Blues and the fact that they're going into the playoffs with a six-game losing streak, and I want to ask Kelly about that. But you watch the team on this streak, especially near the end of it, and they really seem to be lacking confidence.
Right, and you're right. They have struggled here down the stretch, and it's unbelievable. We were talking about this off-air right before Kelly Chase came on. The fact that the St. Louis Blues, in about 3 weeks, Dave,
yeah,
went from a Stanley Cup favorite to an underdog in the first round, and it's because of who they match up against. You have to match up against the Chicago Blackhawks, the defending Stanley Cup champions, and I back to your original question, Richie, I don't take anything into the way they played at the end of the season. When we talked about this, when the playoffs start, I know, sure, you have to factor that in a little bit, but when the playoffs start again, it's a whole new series, whole new world, right? And I do think that the Chicago Blackhawks are probably a slight favorite just because of the matchups and the fact that the St. Louis Blues have those injuries.
Mm-hmm.
But you throw in the fact that Ryan Miller is an upgrade over Yarrow Halak and Brian Elliott.
For sure.
And the fact that the St. Louis Blues have better depth than they've had in years, throw in a guy like Steve Ott. But
he can't score, though.
That's
been my issue.
But I think you're right. It will ultimately come down to Richie, the secondary scoring. And that's why the health of TJ Oshie, David Backes, mm-hmm, those guys aren't secondary scorers. That's your top line along with Alex Steen. But you throw in Vladimir Tarasenko and Patrick Berglund. Those guys have to be healthy because that's your offense right there.
Just an update for the listeners. Columbus against Pittsburgh. The Blue Jackets get off to an early lead, 1-0. Jack Johnson scored, assisted by Brandon Dubinsky. The Blue Jackets are leading the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first period of that series. We do have Kelly back on the line now, and Kelly Chase joins us of the St. Louis Blues. Kelly, when we look at the St. Louis Blues, the six-game losing streak, has that affected their confidence?
Well, I think so, but I think there's a it changes in a hurry. I think also what's affected it mostly is the fact that if it had been mixed in amongst the losses during the year, it would have been one thing. They would have won two more points. They would have, you know, won the division. And I think the frustrating part for the team is more the fact that they looked around and nine of their top 12 guys were unhealthy, and some were trying to play, and others just couldn't because the injuries were so serious. And I think that's really the frustrating part, I think, for the whole group. I think they really, felt like they let something slip away. And truth be told, I think if you said to any team, and you guys are in a perfect situation in Winnipeg, hey, you're going to get 111 points, and you're going to be in fourth in the league at the start of the year, would you take that? I mean, you'd take it all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly, a lot of people are talking about the injuries that the Blues have, but I understand that some of the players were back on the ice today. What's the status of most of those injured key players for the Blues?
I think with the exception of Berglund, there's a possibility that all the rest of them could play. Much like, and not to make excuses, because I know that Chicago's got Taves and Kane that were out of the lineup and expected to play too, so I don't expect, and I mean, I'm positive, none of them are 100%, but it also, in all likelihood, you can see some faces in there that gives you a chance, and I think that, to me, is going to be inspirational for a lot of them as well. You look at a guy like Steen and Jaden Schwartz, they're really the offensive catalyst at the end of the year, just trying to make things happen because of all the guys that were out of the lineup. And I think the real dagger was when Patrick Berglund went down and was in such pain in Dallas, and they knew that they had lost another guy. It was almost like you could look around and everybody was holding their arms in the air saying, what's going on? In a matter of 17 days, you've lost nine guys. And and you know, basically played against the Detroit Red Wings on Sunday with the Chicago Wolves.
Kelly, when you look at these two teams and heading into tomorrow night's game one, what's the key matchup for you? What's the key matchup for Ken Hitchcock and his coaching staff?
I think the key to the entire series is the goaltending. I don't think there's any secret about that. I think, you know, St. Louis is heavier than the Hawks, I think, when it comes to the physical standpoint. But I think if they chase too much, they're going to get beat. Hawks have more dynamic guys from a standpoint of creating chances. But yet, if you give them, they don't need as many to capitalize because they've got the higher end skill set. The defense is, in my opinion, kind of a toss up, maybe a little bit of an edge when they were healthy to St. Louis, but I don't know if that's the case. So that's pretty equal. I just think that there's more depth scoring wise against the Chicago Blackhawks. But listen, you know, we've seen the Bruins win when they didn't have as much depth, maybe offensively. We also see, you know, the LA Kings play solid defense and go through a systematic demise of every team they faced when they won the Stanley Cup.
We're joined by Kelly Chase, former St. Louis Blues forward and now a television broadcaster with the team. Kelly, you know, from your perspective, you have kind of inside information. The last 3 years of your career, you played for Joel Quenneville in St. Louis. What kind of coach is he? Well, maybe what kind of coach was he then, and maybe how has he evolved? And also, did he change at all from regular season to playoffs in the style of coaching?
No, Joel's got an unbelievable read on managing personalities. He's the best coach I ever played for, and yet I admire Ken Hitchcock a lot as well because I watched the guys that have left chuckle about, oh, Hitchcock, you all wound up. But that being said, they also say that Ken Hitchcock has made them a lot better player. I've heard Brett Hall say if you pay attention to the system, especially when you're in the playoffs, you'll never have to be more prepared than you will be with Hitch. Yet Joel was a guy for me that I never had to. He respected the way I played, the role I played. He knew that you had to, you know, that the high-end players want their cookies and they're going to whine a little if they don't get them. And so he managed that. He's a guy that at the end of the year when there was all the personal bonuses, he sent a paper around the back of the plane. We always play on the West Coast. Write down what bonuses you're close to, and he would try and get guys on the ice in favorable positions to get their bonuses. So,
wow.
You know, he's just a guy. I mean, he's my favorite coach that I played for, and I can say the same for their staff because Mike Kitchen was one of the guys that was our assistant coach, and Lord knows he skated the hell out of me every night and when I wasn't playing or after practice. Jamie Compound was one of our coaches. They're all there in Chicago, so I admire you know what they've done. I've been a Blue and been a part of it for 20 some years now, 26 years. So certainly, I would love for the Blues to have that opportunity to carry the cup. But I know coaching style wise, you got two guys that are very different yet very prepared in both ways that the players end up playing for them.
Kelly, I wanted to ask you about the fourth lines of these two teams because all the focus going into these series, and rightly so, because offense obviously wins games, but as we know, there are intangibles that win games. So when you look at the fourth lines of this team and the St. Louis Blues, I should say, I've been very impressed with this team, and I know a guy like Max Lapierre is probably one of the most hated guys in the NHL as an agitator, but when you look at that line, Winnipeg's Ryan Reeves is on that line, and other guys like Adam Cracknell and possibly Steve Ott, who was acquired from the Buffalo Sabres, might be on that fourth line. The question is, what role does a fourth line play, really, aside from scoring, obviously, but do you think this fourth line will have an impact in the series? As we know, a guy like Brian Bickle had a big impact for Chicago last year.
Yeah, he did, but I mean, he was a first line guy. I mean, he ended up playing with Kane and playing with Taves and guys like that. But I think it makes a big impact. You know, hey, listen, depending on how, you know, you have to be physical. You want to stay within the rules, but you got to make sure as the series wears down, those little bumps and bruises add up to situations where you got opportunities. And I think, hey, look, Mike Rupp hadn't played in a long time, and I consider him an honest player, but he made a huge impact as a fourth-line player against Minnesota when we played them. He knocked T.J. Oshie out cold. He got him in the chin. He got suspended for it. But, boy, if we'd have played Minnesota, wouldn't that have been an impact in the play? So I'm not by any means suggesting that that's how fourth lines make impacts, but I think there's different ways that you can make an impact. Physical play is certainly the consistent one with fourth lines, because you have to continue to make guys believe that they got to get the puck away earlier than they need to. The bangs, the bruises, they compound as the series goes on and the playoffs go on. And so the fourth line, not only do they have to do that, but they have to contribute offensively. I think when you look at a team, and I'll go back to when the Detroit Red Wings were as effective as they were when it was the grand line and it was Kosher and Maltby and Draper, or when McCarty was in the line, that they made a big impact in every cup that they won. And those are stories that continue to grow every year in the playoffs because those types of players are difference makers.
Kelly, you know, matchups, getting back to matchups, and we assume, you know, Keith and Seabrook are going to lock up against the Backes line. And then you look at that second line, obviously Berglund's injury. You mentioned Jaden Schwartz earlier, and he's a player very impressive for his size, protecting the puck, just a smart player. Is he, I know the best players are always the key, but is he maybe the second or third key to the Blues winning the series?
He might be our best. Him and Steen might be our best two offensive players. Certainly Tarasenko's our most gifted scorer. He's the only natural goal scorer we got, so if we get him in the lineup, that's a plus. Oduya, in my opinion, Yarmolson and Oduya are going to be the guys that are going to be getting the heaviest tasks. I think that they're the most sound defensively, don't get enough credit. I know that Keith and Seabrook are certainly guys that they're going to get the matchup they want, but I don't necessarily know that it'll always be against Backes because I believe that they also want to create with Keith and Seabrook, and I think that a lot of times the matchup that they get might be, you know, favorable if they can get them against a second or a third unit because they know that that's the second wave of offense that they get. So, yes, Jaden Schwartz is a guy that's got to be a difference maker in this series, but we've got a couple guys that are young guys like that that have cut their teeth in the league a little bit that need to make a mark, and he's certainly one of them.
Final question for you, Kelly. And we talked about the Blackhawks defense. We should talk about the Blues defense. We actually had a discussion on this show about a month or two ago about who had the better defense. And we agree that those are two of the top three or four defenses in the National Hockey League. Bomeister and Pietrangelo, they go to the Olympics, obviously. Shattenkirk as well. Did you notice a difference in their play at all after they came back? And if so, or if not, do you think that'll have an effect on how they play in the playoffs?
I think there's a lot of guys that benefited from the Olympic experience. I look at Jamie Benn. I think he's elevated his play. Matt Duchene is a guy that elevated his play. I think that Pietrangelo is a guy that I think is better since the Olympics in a lot of things. And composure is one of them. Bomeister's just been steady the whole entire time. I think he does, you know, some fantastic things. Certainly Shattenkirk came back maybe with a different outlook on it, but yet very gifted at understanding the ins and outs of you know, what makes you successful in the game. So if he can grow from that as we go here, I think that's even going to be better. But I think all of these guys that you just mentioned and Chicago's defense, certainly they're all at the Olympics, you know, and the two I mentioned in the gold medal game. I think what you're talking about is guys gaining confidence and knowing that they're elite in the league, and I think that's extremely important. And I say this about a lot of things, but it's like changing a tire. The first time you're a kid and you got to change a tire, you might have to read the owner's manual. And usually every time you got to do it after that, it gets a little bit easier. So every path you walk down, you know the way around a little bit better. It makes it, you know, the experience, I think, the next time around a little bit more enjoyable and yet a little bit easier because you know where the bumps are. You know where, you know, you may have some trouble, or like you said with the tire. You know that you don't put the car on a downhill slope. So I think with these guys, every experience that they can take something out of, like the Olympic experience, is a bonus to help them grow.
It's a shame they have to play in the first round. It could be a Stanley Cup final matchup. Kelly Chase of Porcupine Plain, Saskatchewan. Thanks very much for joining us on NHL Midweek.
Hey guys, and I heard it snowed there again. I'm looking, you know, I'm rooting for you guys to actually get out of that weather for a bit. I know I called home in Saskatchewan and when they got dumped on there again, and I'm feeling bad for you guys.
Yeah, it's only like minus 10 this morning, Kelly. So enjoy the weather in St. Louis.
There's no summer this year.
You guys are fine then.
Yeah, we're toughing it out. Kelly Chase, thanks very much for joining us. When we come back, Toronto Maple Leafs have hired Brendan Shanahan. We're going to break that down. I believe he was a former teammate of Kelly Chase in St. Louis. Next on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live from the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe, the final NHL Midweek of the season. going to be back next season, but we're taking the Wednesdays off. Saturdays will still be there all throughout the summer and the spring. We'll be on in the spring at starting at 9 a.m. So you can
right
find us
early, Richie.
This Saturday, 9 a.m., talking Cheval Dayoff's press conference, talking lottery, talking Olli Jokinen's value. It's going to be really interesting. I'm joined at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe by our great producer, Chris Curry, Ezra Ginsberg, and David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com. And David has some news for us.
Just for those who are looking who missed it earlier, we have Paul Maurice's teleconference that he did with the media this afternoon at 2 o'clock. We also have Kevin Cheveldayoff's press conference, which went at 10 this morning. So both those can be found on IllegalCurve.com. You can listen to all the audio clips, and we've cut it so you can actually specify which ones you want to hear as opposed to having to listen to the entire thing.
Score update before we talk about the Leafs, because they're not in the playoffs. Montreal, Tampa, halfway through the second, tied 1-1. End of the first in Pittsburgh. Columbus Blue Jackets took a 1-0 lead in the period. Pittsburgh tied it up. Former Penn, Mark Letestu, scores the 2-1 goal, and in the first intermission, the Columbus Blue Jackets have a 2-1 lead over the Pittsburgh Penguins. Our question's already being raised about Marc-Andre Fleury. That's for another day, maybe later on this playoffs.
Just quickly on the Columbus Blue Jackets here, Richie, I think we all picked the Columbus Blue Jackets, and I don't think a lot of people... A lot of people didn't pick the Columbus Blue Jackets. Mm-hmm. Most people picked Pittsburgh. But without Nathan Horton and Nick Foligno and RJ Umberger are kind of iffy for this series, it's guys like Mark Letestu, it's guys like Boone Jenner, Jack Johnson has 2 points.
I like the team.
They're going to have to get offense from these types of sources. And as we know, you ask anybody that's watched the Columbus Blue Jackets, the reason why this team's in the playoffs, sure, Ryan Johansson's been good. Mm-hmm. Sergei Bobrovsky.
That's right.
He's really given them a chance to win every single night. He's been defending Vezina Trophy winner, but they're up 2-1 right now. I don't expect them to really hold on to any series lead in going forward, but it's nice to see their first ever playoff lead.
It doesn't help when Sidney Crosby has zero shots in the first game.
Yeah, and they're talking about a little bit on TV. It looks like a wrist problem that might be causing some issue there. They can't afford to lose him. I mean, that's one thing we can agree on. Guys, this week the Maple Leafs made news. What a surprise. They make news when they walk across the ice. They make news when they walk into the locker room. But they actually did make news in all seriousness this week with the hiring as president and alternate governor of Brendan Shanahan, Ontario boy, former Blue Devil, Ranger,
Hall of Famer,
Hartford Whaler, and Detroit Red Wing. Hall of Famer is right, Ezzy. What I want to know is they hire Brendan Shanahan. It's basically a position that did not exist before, which is becoming commonplace in the National Hockey League, is hiring guys and creating positions for them. What do you make of the hiring of Brendan Shanahan, and do you think far too much was made of this hiring by the media?
I think you answered the question, Richie, right in the beginning. I think if someone goes to get a box of popcorn at the Air Canada Center, the Toronto media writes a story about it. So no, absolutely not. This is big. Brendan Shanahan leaves his job as head of NHL department.
Terrible job, by the way. Nobody wants that job.
Well, I'm just saying, he left a job that he was very secure in. And I think we would all agree that this isn't something that came out of nowhere. I think MLSC was probably talking to Brendan Shanahan months ago, if not a year ago. And I think that was reported. But when you look at this position, the trend in the NHL, Dave, has been for former superstars to take over as president of hockey operations. Joe Sakic, Trevor Linden, all of these, the list goes on and on. But Brendan Shanahan, they gave him the role of president of the Toronto Maple Leafs, not hockey operations. Sure, but let's focus on the hockey operations. I think immediately what comes to mind is not necessarily if Randy Carlyle is going to be there, at least for me. I think his job was already in jeopardy before they announced that Brendan Shanahan was coming in. I think it is what is Dave Nonis's job going forward. And Dave Nonis, in the press conference, said himself, Brendan Shanahan is my boss. And I think this issue came up with Brian Burke and Jay Feaster in Calgary. And I think it's no different. I think the fact that they named him president, not just of hockey operations, and of course there is a business aspect to his job. Thing is, Richie, for all of these guys, there's a business element to their jobs.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, it's about player personnel and how he's going to form this team in his own vision. And I think that when you look at who they've had in there, whether it's Ken Dryden or Brian Burke or Nonis, everyone's failed to get this team past the first round and into a situation where they're perennial contenders. So I think it is a big deal because now I think it puts a little bit of pressure on Dave Nonis. Dave Nonis, as we know, signed a 5-year contract.
These 5-year contracts, these teams make so much money, Toronto, Vancouver, they can get rid of 5-year deals. There's no cap ramifications.
Yep. It's a little bit different than in a smaller market. It's a good point.
I mean, we talked about the four-year deal for Maurice. I mean, Gillis and Tortorella had more money. Like, I'm assuming Maurice isn't making close as much money as Tortorella is making and probably will be making if he gets fired. But, guys, I want to get back to Nonis. Dave Nonis sits at the table with Brendan Shanahan and Tim Lewicki. Basically, Lewicki says, Nonis has done a terrible job. I'm bringing in Brendan Shanahan, but I'm keeping Dave Nonis. How awkward was that?
Well, I had major problems with what Dave Nonis didn't do at the trade deadline. We had Michael Trakos on. We've had Jonas Siegel on. We've talked about this ourselves time and time again, Richie, about the Toronto Maple Leafs. What was the problem with this team? They weren't good enough on the back end. They needed to go out and get someone, not Tim Gleason. They needed to go out and get a bona fide number one pairing defenseman. Dion Phaneuf was struggling himself.
He's not growing trees, though,
with Carl. I know, but he not only did he not do anything, that coincided, Richie, with the losing streak. I mean, this was a colossal letdown, way worse, in my opinion, than the first round against the Boston Bruins, in the sense that they don't even make the playoffs.
I agree with that.
So they go from a team that has a great top line. I've talked about how much I love the Bozak, Van Riemsdyk, Kessel line. It's a great line, but you don't win anymore with one good line. You need a good second line. You need secondary scoring. You need a complete team. The way this team is constructed is flawed.
But then why? But then why keep Nonis around?
Well, it's a good point. But I think that this puts the pressure on Dave Nonis by bringing Shanny in. And I think if you don't see that, really, you're blind, because the fact you mentioned it, Richie, Brendan Shanahan gets introduced, and instead of saying, Dave Nonis, we're going to change the direction of this team, they say, we're going to change the direction of this team, but we're going to keep you around for basically an indeterminate amount of time.
I mean, that's one thing. Then you hear the Tim Lewicki rumors, Dave, that Tim Lewicki may not be coming, like, staying around long. I heard an interview with him this week. You know, what's your status with the? Because there's rumors Tim Lewicki, who's running MLSC right now, is wants out. And you hear an interview
he's
with
just
him.
Tired.
I heard an interview with him this week. I'm not going to retire here, he says. Well, that doesn't bode well in terms of confidence.
Well, he hired Drake for the Raptors, so I guess he's really left his mark on the
well,
Toronto.
Yeah, I mean,
Toronto sports landscape.
He hired Masai Ujiri in Toronto and the Raptors. He's done a good job, and again, we can't really tell. He's done a bunch with the MLS, with the Toronto FC, and all that stuff. They say he doesn't know hockey, but you know, he entrusted Dean Lombardi in LA. Is there just
was
too
there
much
long before, for a long time?
Right. Is there just too much going on in Toronto, Dave? And does this all matter in the fact they have all these guys signed long term anyways? I mean, how much of an effect can Shanahan and these guys have?
Well, the good news for Shanahan, I actually watched him being interviewed at the Raptors game with Tim Lewicki, and they were chatting, and he said, "Well, the good news is that I'm going from a position where people constantly question my decisions to a position where people will constantly question my decisions."
Yeah, except for times 100.
Yes, no, of course. Yeah. But the fact is that, I mean, what was Toronto going to do? I mean, they had to do something, clearly, and this is, I think this is just the first step. I think we're going
to
see something.
It's the first step, I think, to Randy Carlisle.
That's what I was about to
I
say.
I agree with that.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
If there was any doubt, sorry to cut you off,
no,
Dave. If there was any doubt to Randy Carlisle being fired, bringing in Brendan Shanahan preemptively, I think, answers that question.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was thinking, is that this will be the first move. Then you're going to have Carlisle go next.
So then why is Nonis there?
Well, I don't know that he'll be there long. I honestly don't.
What do we know about Brendan? I know one thing about Brendan Shanahan. I mean, Colin Campbell's and Brian Burke. These guys have been in and out of hockey, and they've done the disciplinarian role. But and you watch a lot of games, obviously, because you're seeing all the games every night and you're making decisions. But what do we know about Brendan Shanahan? I mean, don't get me wrong, great player, Hall of Famer, one of my favorite players to watch. What does he know about running a team? We don't know. And the thing about Stevie Yzerman is he worked in Detroit with Kenny Holland. And the thing about some of the other players, Joe Sakic even was in Colorado for a while before he was
a little bit more behind the scenes.
Still experiencing and taking a role. So there were these guys have experience before. Mark Bergevin as well, not a superstar player by any means, but a guy who was in the Chicago front office. So with no experience at all, dropping him to the hockey hotbed of the Toronto seems to me to be a big risk.
I agree with you, Richie. And I think the only maybe experience he has in management is the staff that he managed for the NHL.
What do they know about building a team?
Well, no, exactly.
That's the problem.
But I'm saying that's the only management experience he's had since he retired. So managing guys like Stefan Quentin. But as far as managing an NHL team, he doesn't have any experience.
He may be great,
so,
but
so they are. They are. Well, I'm just saying.
But who knows? That's right, what I mean.
I agree with you in the sense that you can't just look at what he's done with the NHL and say, well, he's done that and he can translate it over. look how many guys have failed, and they wrote about this in the Toronto Star. Ken Dryden is a Canadian senator. He failed. Cliff Fletcher failed. Disciple of Sam Pollock. Mm-hmm. He failed. So a lot of guys have failed in that role. And so they're entrusting Brendan Shanahan to right a ship that was going in the right direction, guys, because a couple of years ago, two seasons ago, the Leafs were 1 minute away from winning the first round, and now they're a team that isn't even in the playoffs.
But you don't.
I'm just saying, I think that really they see the way things are going, and I agree with you. I think it begs the question, why was Dave Nonis kept around?
I think that question will be answered in due time, Ezzy, but I just think it's been an odd week of happenings there in Toronto. This segment was brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. For over 25 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Gentlemen, when we come back, Dan Rusinowski, the play-by-play man on radio for the San Jose Sharks, to preview the Sharks against the Kings. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Bill Thornton, a better hustle to it, and he does on the far side as he just got to it ahead of Ladd, the captain of the Jets. Now Burns down the right with Pavelski, gives it back to Burns in the slot of the backhand. He scores! Just a little quick play started by Joe Thornton on the far side of the ice, and then he got it over to Burns, who exchanged with Pavelski beautifully, and a backhand shot by Brent Burns is a power play goal for the Sharks forward. It's the Sharks 2 and the Jets 1.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live from the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe in downtown Winnipeg. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair tonight for Drew Mandel, who will be joining us not this Saturday on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, but next Saturday, because this is the final NHL midweek of the season. It's been an enjoyable one so far. I'm joined at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe by Ezra Ginsberg and David Manouk of IllegalCurve.com. And Chris Curry's been doing a great job helping us out here at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. Guys, we're having Dan Rusinowski on in a second here.
What a great radio voice, by the way.
Absolutely. And you hear that clip there. The San Jose Sharks against the Los Angeles Kings. And we spoke to Kelly Chase about half an hour ago talking about Blues-Hawks. I mean, that could be a Stanley Cup final matchup if you just put all the teams into the mixer. Same thing for this series, San Jose-LA. And what I like about this series is the contrast in styles. Similar to what you saw in St. Louis-Chicago. In St. Louis-LA played last year in the first round, big, tough series. Here, St. Louis, I mean, in that series, St. Louis, bigger, tough team. Chicago, more skill, finesse, fast. San Jose and Chicago's not small necessarily, but San Jose has the size probably to match LA, but they're not as aggressive as LA, but they're faster than LA. So there's an interesting contrast there. And Dan Rusinowski joins us now on the line. Dan, thanks for joining us tonight.
Great to be with you guys.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. And Dan, we were talking just before you hopped on about the Sharks and the Kings and maybe the contrast in styles. You know, we talked about how the Sharks are a pretty big team, and obviously LA is a big and a heavy team, as people like to say. But the Sharks seem to have the edge speed-wise. Will that be a key for them in this series?
Well, I think that the way that they handle the other team's strength is probably the key to the series. Both teams have excellent goaltending. The Sharks have Antti Niemi. He's won a Stanley Cup. The Kings have Jonathan Quick. He's won a Stanley Cup. And in fact, if I'm not mistaken, that's the only series that has starting goaltenders that have each won a Stanley Cup before. Beyond that, the Sharks have good size, like the Kings do. As you alluded to, maybe LA's strength is a little bit better in the playing heavier department, not that the Sharks don't. And the Sharks' strength might be in the speed through four lines, not that the Kings don't. So they're very, very close teams, which have very, very subtle differences, really. And that's why it's such a special series. You add into the fact that they play a lot. You have the geographical rivalry between the two cities and the whole region of Northern versus Southern California. And you've got the recipe for an absolutely epic series. And it reminds me a lot in that way of the way that the Sharks played the Detroit Red Wings all those years for so many seasons. They knew each other so well, and they played such a quality game that you got great hockey. And that's what I'm expecting, probably the best played series of all the first rounds that I'm expecting.
Dan, you cover the San Jose Sharks and do a great job on the radio there, and you know the team very intimately. When you look at this series, San Jose Sharks, LA Kings, everyone seems to be predicting that this series is going to go to seven games. I would have to agree with that. When you look at the San Jose Sharks, though, and how they match up against the LA Kings, for you, what player is kind of the key player in this series?
Well, it depends on how you look at it. I think from a defensive standpoint, I'm looking at Marc-Edouard Vlasic because he's going to be on the ice when the top players on the Kings are out there. I'd say that defensively speaking, he may be that guy. But having said that, Joe Pavelski, with the season that he's had, is one of these guys that always seems to give his absolute best when it matters the most. And that could be a difference. You know, a lot of the other factors in the series could cancel themselves out. Patrick Marleau has had maybe his most consistent season, and that's something that's very special going into the playoffs. And Joe Thornton, again, continues to provide leadership and do a lot of great things. But, you know, you have some of the same things happening on the other side of the ice with Kopitar and with, you know, a guy like Justin Williams who scored some big goals in his career and players like that. So I really think that could be the difference. And it does come down to goaltending in so many of these series that go seven games. So the Niemi versus Quick factor is also going to be a big part of this.
We're joined by Dan Rusinowski, San Jose Sharks play-by-play man on the radio in San Jose. Dan, you mentioned Joe Pavelski lined up at practice this morning between Tommy Wingles and Marty Havlat, and you've seen him kind of play all over the place when he scored as many goals as he did this year, but playing a lot with, you know, playmaker like Joe Thornton. Why the decision to go with the lineup that they seem to be going with in Game 1?
Well, for the simple reason that I think that the Sharks are probably a stronger team when Pavelski's at center and when he's the third guy up the middle with Couture and Thornton. Not that he finishes third in any stretch of the imagination, but because that provides the Sharks with three very deep lines that are difficult to contend with amongst any of the opponents they might face in the NHL. And a lot of that's part and parcel to how Tomas Hertl is doing and where he can fit in. Obviously, he's played with Joe Thornton and Brent Burns before and looked very, very good earlier in the season. They gave him a couple of games in the regular year at the end of the schedule to see how healthy he was. Looks like he's all right. And then the Rafi Torres factor, too. So I just think it's probably the mix of where they really want to have him. They'd like to have him at center. He wins a lot of faceoffs. But just because he's in that, in quotes, third group, you know, Marty Havlat's awfully skilled and just scored a hat trick and had 4 points a couple of games ago. And Wingles has shown that he can play in a variety of roles. He's played with Marleau and Couture, too. So I think it basically gives the Sharks three top lines, and that's something that's difficult for anybody to contend with.
You know, it is. So you look at those three lines, and they are maybe as deep as any other team in the National Hockey League, Dan. Brent Burns, the guy, you know, they bring in the blockbuster deal a few years back to really solidify their back end, and it happens to be that they kind of change their style midway through the last season. They make a few trades. Doug Murray's out, and they move Burns to forward. They try and do a little more of a fast-paced speed game, get the puck moving more quickly. Brent Burns' big body, though, great shot, good on the power play. A guy like that plays a little differently than a lot of the Sharks. And not to say that they're not necessarily a physical team. You mentioned Rafi Torres. But Burns is a guy that may change the look. And I know he played last year in this series. But a full year at forward, is he a guy that LA is going to have trouble moving in front of the net?
He's a key factor in the series, too, because of the way that he plays so physically. And I think his unpredictability really is another untalked about feature of the way he plays the game. In fact, Todd McLellan's joked about it a few times. He says that if his teammates don't know what the heck he's going to do, certainly the opposition doesn't know. And I think that loose wire, that unpredictable nature, that reflexive, reactive way that he plays the game is something to contend with. And when you throw in the size, you know, 6'4 and 220, whatever, this guy is very much a monster on the ice, and I think he's a little bit more creative and effective at forward, where he's not thinking as much, he's just reacting. And then he uses the big butt check and nailing guys in the corner and getting physical with them. That's something that LA certainly will pay a lot of attention to.
We're joined by Dan Rusinowski, the play-by-play voice for the San Jose Sharks on the radio in San Jose. Just a quick score update. Brian Gionta scores. Habs have tied at 2-2. Montreal-Tampa, and now 3-3. Columbus, Pittsburgh, only at the beginning of the second period.
Awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Dan, we wanted to ask you, once you scrape away the big guys, the Joe Thorntons, the Patrick Marleaus, the Joe Pavelskis, and the Mike Richards, and the Anze Kopitars, there's a couple of guys to me that have the ability to have a huge impact on their respective teams. Two guys that have had storied injury problems, those being Marty Havlat for the San Jose Sharks and Marian Gabrick for the LA Kings. What kind of role do you think Marty Havlat can have for this Sharks team? And I guess as a second part of that question, which one of these guys do you think will have a bigger impact on the respective team in the series?
It's funny that you put them together because they have so many of the same skills that delight fans, and then they have so many of the same stories that infuriate some fans with the way that they've played over the last couple of years. But the good story about Marty Havlat is that he's healthy now. And he hasn't really been all that healthy the last year and a half. And that's something that really showed when he scored a hat trick two games to go in the regular season and really looked solid playing alongside Couture and Marleau in that particular game. So he's somebody that just adds another scoring touch to the team. He's an artist on the ice, so he can make the beautiful pass. And he has shown that he wants to play the way that Todd McClellan wants the Sharks to play. That's been an adjustment for him, I think, and something that's an evolving creature. But in big games, in playoff hockey, he's been known to score quite a few, you know, big goals and make some nice passes for points. And, you know, he's been part of teams that have gone very far in the Stanley Cup playoffs before. And in addition to that, when things aren't going well with some of his teammates, he's been the guy that sort of has come through. I remember, when the Sharks did not play that great against the St. Louis Blues, he happened to get the only goal in that game. So, the only game-winning goal in that series for San Jose. So, he's somebody that'll help, and I think Gabrick provides some of that same ability too for the LA Kings. He can snipe, he can score, maybe a little bit more of a pure goal scorer than Havlat may be, but somebody that I think adds depth and bulk to their scoring abilities. And, you know, if Kopitar, you know, gets him the puck and, these guys are going to create room for him with people like Dustin Brown obviously causing trouble on the ice, that's going to be bad news for the Sharks. So I think they have very similar roles with their teams.
You know, Antoniemi, Dan has had maybe some issues, but I want to talk about, and final question here, we'll let you go after this and appreciate your time tonight, is the defense of San Jose. And I look at this forward roster, as you mentioned, it's as good as any in the league. Niemi may have had some struggles, but he's, won a Stanley Cup, as you mentioned as well. The defense in a, maybe not a series, but maybe over four series if the Sharks are going to make a run, leaves me with some question marks. I know, Justin Braun plays a full year this season, and I think Jason Demers is one of the more underrated offensive defensemen in the National Hockey League. Does the team have enough on the back end, though, to be able to make a long run in the playoffs?
I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that they do. And in fact, that was one of the things that allowed Brent Burns to move to forward a year ago. It allowed Doug Wilson to make the deals with Ryan Clough and Douglas Murray and Michael Hanzus and get faster and a little bit younger up through the lineup because of the fact that guys like Jason Demers and Justin Braun have developed so beautifully with this team. They've got some experience back there with Stewart and with Scott Hannon. These are guys with a lot of experience. They play a physical brand of game. And then you've got Demers and Braun, as I mentioned, developing along with Marc-Edouard Vlasic under the tutelage of such qualified people as Larry Robinson with nine Stanley Cups and with Jim Johnson, who's an excellent defensively oriented coach as well. So I think that really made all of this possible. It made Burns possible to move, made it possible for Burns to move to forward because of the fact that they had a little bit more depth. And there's more coming, too, with some youngsters in the organization that probably aren't ready to be part of it this year. But it's the system that the Sharks have put in place with Tim Burke and with Doug Wilson and with the entire scouting staff to find players of that nature and then work them into, from the hole that you have into the diamond that you get after all of the work that you put into it, and that's what they're getting.
I guess, Dan, the Sharks would be happy if all the home teams won this year.
If the what?
If all the home teams were victorious like they were last year in the series, that they'd be happy.
Well, yeah, I think they'd be pretty thrilled with that, and that's what you fight through the regular season to get. They have home ice against the Los Angeles Kings. They really had to earn that. They have a lot of trouble with L.A. On the road. L.A. has a lot of trouble with San Jose at SAP Center, And it's going to come down to one team getting a victory on the road, maybe a couple of long overtime games. We've had some crazy ones in this series. You know, the Sharks came back from down four a couple of years ago, one of the great comebacks. They call it, you know, the miracle on Manchester when the Kings did it, but when the Sharks did it, it was the fiasco on Figueroa. That's what they were talking about. And, you know, the overtime game when the Sharks beat L.A. back in 2011, game six, that was Joe Thornton scoring kind of a classic goal in Sharks history to capture the series. So we've seen a lot of dramatic moments between these two teams. That home ice advantage has often been the difference, not only with the Kings, but also with Anaheim kind of uniquely. It's been a real home ice series in that one, too. So that's what we're expecting, and getting that home ice is really huge.
Dan Resinowski of San Jose Sharks Play-by-Play on radio, thank very much for joining us on NHL Midweek. And, Dan, enjoy the series. It's going to be awfully fun.
We're looking forward to it, and I can't wait to get it started. And thanks for having me on. We'll talk soon.
Talk soon.
Thanks
when
a lot,
we
Dan.
Come back, guys, the final NHL Midweek segment of the season. Can you believe it? It's gone so quickly. We're going to do news and notes. It's going to include Craig McTavish talking about Dallas Eakins, Paul McLean, and the comments by Brian Murray and Eugene Melnyk. And if we get to it, if we have time, and we touched on it at the beginning of the show, Andrew McDonald's big contract extension in Philadelphia.
A lot of matzo balls, Richie.
Guys, quick score update. I mean, the scores are changing so rapidly. Habs 2-2, end of second, middle of the second period, Columbus 3, Pittsburgh 3, and Dallas-Anaheim tonight on TSN starting at 9 o'clock.
If you're driving your car, get out of your car and go watch these games.
And listen to the show, too, though.
And listen to the show.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Final segment of the final NHL Midweek of the season. We're somber, yet we are excited to bring you this last segment. Richard Pollock joined to the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe in downtown Winnipeg by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, Chris Curry, and Michael Remus back down at the studio, doing a terrific job getting us on and off the air. The last segment of that last midweek show of the season ends with news and notes.
NHL news and notes.
I'm more confident in my decision to hire Dallas Eakins today than the day that I hired him. I'm more convinced that this guy is the right coach to lead us into much more successful time. I really feel like he's the guy to add the cultural elements and police the cultural elements that are necessary to build the type of quality team that we're trying to build.
You gotta love, that's Craig McTavish, Edmonton Oilers general manager, talking about his head coach Dallas Eakins. You have to love, guys, the National Hockey League, where a guy coaches for a year and then the GM has to come out and give him a vote of confidence. Is it not unbelievable, Dave? Is it not unbelievable?
It's actually scary that he has to like already have that vote of confidence because everybody is clamoring for his head because he wasn't able to take a team that underperformed. I mean, there's only so much you can do with as Claude Noel's used to say, with the people that you have on the ice.
You know, yeah, but one thing, though. You know what hurt him, I think, is Patrick Waugh's success in Colorado with the offensive-heavy young team without much defense.
Well, I mean, the reality is that Dallas Eakins was successful in the AHL. Wasn't like he had a huge NHL pedigree. So, yeah. I mean, like, you know, at the same time, like, maybe there's a reason he isn't that good as an NHL coach. So, I mean, the problem with Craig McTavish and the reason he has to kind of back him is because how many coaches are they going to go through now?
It's unbelievable.
Right, and it's
bring back Quinn back.
It's too early to tell if he could be successful as an NHL coach. Mm-hmm. I don't know about other people. I know that you guys didn't think that the Edmonton Oilers would be a playoff team this year. I certainly didn't. I thought that they would be better than they were. Let's be honest.
I had them. I thought they'd be the Colorado, and I was wrong about that.
I didn't. Sure. I thought they'd be at the bottom of the you were obviously more optimistic mm-hmm. about this roster,
wrongfully.
Richie. But the goaltending, to me, just wasn't good enough. The defense wasn't good enough. Mm-hmm. And I think the depth wasn't good enough. And you look at what went wrong. What didn't go wrong? Yeah. I mean, everything. With Igor Larionov having to come in and defend Nail Yakupov, there were rumors that he was going to be traded. The defense, a guy like Anton Belov was good in Russia, but he turned out to be just not good enough for the NHL game. And really, it is, Richie, it's, you know, Dave used the word scary. I think that is a better word than unbelievable because What else, you know, could really happen to this coaching staff that hasn't already happened? Ralph Kruger did a pretty good job, and I think he had the special teams. Richie mentioned that, rightly so. He had the special teams going really well. Dallas Eakins hasn't had the level of success that Ralph Kruger had as far as the special teams go. So you've had so many coaches over the last 5 or 6 years. You can't afford to keep changing your coaches again and again. To have to give him that vote of confidence is just reflective of really how bad, in my opinion, how bad this season went.
Last question here, guys, on the show. Paul McClain, he gets the vote of confidence too. Two seasons where he takes his team to the playoffs. You know, even surprisingly, you'd say, in terms of the way his team has played prior to the season, he came out and said, you know, maybe I made some changes in my style I shouldn't have done, and Brian Murray basically confirmed that. Why are we talking about his job?
It's unbelievable. I don't think we talked about this on Saturday's show, Richie. You know, I thought that Paul McClain should be back, and I think there were so many problems with this team, the young defense, goaltending that really took a downturn.
Sure did.
And secondary scoring that just wasn't there. If you want to look at Mika Zibanejad or other players that really just didn't take the next step, sure, it's a young team, but I think they are trending in the right direction. I look at the Ottawa Senators and Bobby Ryan. Richie, you brought this up also on the Saturday show. What's his status? Are you going to bring him back? He's a free agent. So there's a lot of question marks, but I think Paul McClain, he can't take all the blame here. I think there's certain issues that need to be addressed. They need to bring in other players. And just this, to me, was a year that where everything just seemed to go wrong for this team.
I think what it speaks to a lot is expectations in the Canadian markets. I think it just goes to show you that how high people's the fan bases in these cities are expecting of their teams. And so that to me is kind of what it is, just a testament to.
I think I agree, and that's just it. You know, Dallas Eakins learns on the job, early practices, players don't like it. Paul McClain, too hard on the players. In a Canadian environment, people are so hard on them. They want them fired as opposed to letting them learn and letting them evolve as head coaches. That's it, guys. Had a great year on NHL Midweek, but the Legal Curve Hockey Show is sticking around all year. There's hockey to talk about all the time. So we're going to join you on Saturday, talk about Sheveldayoff, Presser, Olli Jokinen's contract prospects, the lottery, picking ninth overall, and of course, the Stanley Cup playoffs. I want to thank the guests of tonight's show, Anthony Sanfilippo, PhiladelphiaFlyers.com, Kelly Chase of the St. Louis Blues, and Dan Rusinowski of the San Jose Sharks. Our sponsors, I'd love to thank, of course, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, CompuStitch Embroidery and Design, and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. It has been a great time this season. 9 a.m. on Saturday, we'll see you. For Michael Remus, back at the studio, Chris Curry, Ezra Ginsberg, and David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, I'm Richard Pollack. We'll see you on Saturday. Enjoy the playoffs until then.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.